Don't worry about it.
That happened in Detroit, man. They look out. Folks look out. You go places and they just like, get out of here.
It's crazy.
They love like sports.
Yeah.
First off, sports. Okay, Calvin, don't do that. It's not Detroit. It's you.
Nah, he's, look at him. Man.
They do that a lot.
See, you know, you'd be out there.
You'd be out
there. Even you, Ryan. See, you sit here.
It's you, Calvin. They know you. Yeah. You 7'8".
You know? Like the basketball players that try to walk little and sneak around.
Can't go nowhere.
Them Joe 6'11 and be walking like this too slow. Man, they see your big ass. Stand up. Hey.
But like I was telling Freddie T, man, he don't understand what that week of prep like when you're going to play Calvin. I used to be sitting in the meeting. I used to be like, yeah, Troy, so if they come out in this formation, you know, it's the one where they really like to go to Calvin, you should probably go to his side. You should go over there.
Nah, coach, I'm going to stay weak.
I said, hey, coach, I said, the Hall of Famer is going to be over there. That ain't my side.
I'm going to stay weak. I'm going to just, you know, I'm comfortable
that's
over
that,
there.
That section.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On a mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On this vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On a mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Welcome to the Pivot, bro. It is an honor for us three to have you sit down with us. Channing, Freddie T, I'm RC. Just being here in Detroit, and Freddie T was talking about it at the draft, you know, you guys bring out the current stars of the team, the Jared Goffs, the Hutchinsons, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and also you and Barry Sanders, yep. Hall of Famers, first ballot guys, no question guys. And y'all walk up to the mic, and combined, y'all probably said 5 words. Right?
Go Lions.
Detroit, what up, though? What up, though?
What has it been like to have this immense amount of talent, yet truly, like, not just one of those people that fakes modesty, but behaves in such a humble way?
Man, it's just the way I was raised, man. Grandfather, Baptist preacher. You know, my mom is now a minister, but, you know, you would have thought she was a minister back in the day, the way she treated everybody in the household, you know. So it wasn't no strand, you know, too far from the word back in the day, you know. But really, what that just taught us was a level of discipline, you know, that, you know, carried with us, you know, throughout our life. Now, on top of that, you know, just seeing them go to work day in, day out.
Yeah.
You know, put their head down. My mom was a teacher, flight attendant, you know. She done, you know, went on to get her PhD or her doctorate and stuff mm-hmm. like that, just continually elevating, you know, her game. My dad, you know, just Mr. Consistent, you know, he worked for the railroad for 30 plus years. Day in, day out, he on call. You know, they might call him middle of the afternoon, we had a baseball game, they might call him at night when we had dinner, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's just consistent, going to go to work, come home, take care of his family, you know. So just being able to see that, you know, it wasn't a whole bunch of like hoopla and all that, you know, just consistency, you know.
Bro, fame ain't change you at all. Cause I'm with you, like, I understand growing up and being modest and having a good family behind you and everybody knows that. But now you're the best receiver in the world. Now your name is Megatron. Like, you're named after a character in a movie. You ain't changed at all. Like, that didn't move anything.
I like nice things. I mean, sure. I like nicer things than I probably did. I have, you know, better taste maybe. That's about it. You know, I don't think it hasn't changed the way I act. You know, it if you ask other people, maybe, because I mean, it strains some relationships. Because, you know, it's tough when you get into, as you all know, when you get into this position, and you know, a lot of people want things, you know, mm-hmm. from you. You know, depending on whether it's just your time, your money, or just you. You know, so just being able to say no, you know, that's it's been tough. It's strained some relationships, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can't just give, you know. Not that you don't want to give, but you can't just give your time and not, you know, be conscious of, you know, retaining some of that time for yourself.
Before I ask my question, I want to say this. Can we have a quick debate? Megatron gotta be the coolest nickname in all of sports.
Yeah, it's dang good.
I don't know a nickname better.
It's dang good. And I think the reason it's such a great nickname is because he didn't give it to himself.
Correct.
Right. Like a lot of these nicknames, like people give them to themselves, like they want to be called that.
Right.
And for your nickname to be so synonymous with your athletic ability and style of play that it's just that name and you know who the hell you're talking about, it's definitely the best at football.
How about the, what, round mound, the rebound?
That's a lot of words.
Come on, man. I enjoy that one.
And it's partial to me. I think there's no greater nickname than Air. Air Jordan is, that is.
Megatron was a bad man, bro.
Yeah, Megatron is Megatron. Hey, we knew what happened when Megatron showed up. But going back to my question, Noonan, Georgia,
yep.
Your childhood and growing up there, what was it like? What are some of your fondest memories? And when did you know that you had an opportunity to eventually go this far and be a star?
Man, yeah, born down there in Noonan, raised in College Park, in Tyrone, Georgia, down there on the south side, man. Just, I go back to College Park, man. I was fortunate to just, we are outside, man. It ain't like today, you know. We're playing outside all the time. Right. You know, my friends down the street, remember Keisha, Patricia. You know, Patricia was a badass, she, you know, professional basketball player. You know, she was always whooping my tail playing basketball as a kid, you know. So that in itself kept me humble. You know, just her whooping my behind all the time, but it just always pushed me to be better. I'm like, man, I can't take this, man. You got to do better. I can't have her whooping my ass all the time. But at the end of the day, you know, her, my sister, and, you know, all my friends in the neighborhood, we were always just in the yard playing baseball, football in the street, you know, the sidelines is the curb, mm-hmm. You know, baseball in the circle, in the cul-de-sac, you know, basketball in the backyard, you know, just whatever. You know, we were always doing something outside, and this competition, I think that's just what it is. Just love to compete. Just love to play, you know, and essentially, you know, that just continued to elevate and, you know, and become more organized throughout sports. And, you know, baseball is my true first love.
Yeah.
I got drafted out of high school for baseball. But by that time, though, I had started playing football at seventh grade. My mom wouldn't let me play when I was little. I wanted to play the Fairburn Flames. I wanted to play because they had, you know, blue helmets with orange flames on them. It just looked cool.
Right.
You know, but she didn't let me play because she didn't want me to get hurt till seventh grade. And at that time, you know, I was a scrub. I was running back, you know, DB, had to hit my growth spurt. Yeah. High school, hit my growth spurt, lanky, don't know how to control my body. But, you know, it was really, at the end of the day, the team sport that what football was, that it took everybody to do their job in order for us to have success. And when we were able to do that, the feeling from that was just like, I mean, that's like the ultimate feeling. It's better than baseball. You know, you winning in baseball is better than winning in basketball. You know, track is a solo sport. Just being able to do that with your brothers, you know. So I think that's why it took over, you know, just my love of sport.
You say your sisters and your and Marquise, what was her name?
Patricia.
They used to beat your ass then. Channing used to get his ass beat by his sister with a car antenna.
Yeah, my sister beat me with a car antenna one time. And then I threw a frozen Kool-Aid cup at her back. And then I got beat again for hitting my sister.
But that's how it was back in the day. Yeah. Like, you get, like, the cord is handy. You know, you get whipped with the cord, you know. But I'm with you, though. Like, first time I hit my sister, bro, and that wasn't the first time, but it was the first time when I got older. I was, like, 13 or something years old. We used to fight all the time growing up. She was 4 years older than me. But one time I got a little older, you know, she hit me, or she hit me in my face or something. And I punched her right in the chest. She just sat, she fell back in the chair, and she was like, wait till daddy get home. I went to the basement and hid the rest of the day. My dad came home from work. I was hoping he didn't come home from work till like night while we were asleep. He came home, and I just heard, doom, 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 doom. See? They called me C. I went upstairs, my dad's the scariest I've ever been in my life. My dad picked me up by my shirt, picked me up in the air, put me on the wall. You ever hit a woman, you ever hit your sister again, boy. And I forgot what he said after that. He might say he killed me, but.
But you know what, though? That was the way we learned lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, even if it wasn't the conversation about, hey, just let me sit you down and tell you about how you're supposed to treat a woman, you learn through family. Mm-hmm. And that's what parenting is. Also, you mentioned, like, your taste changing. You also do like white people activities and rich people activities now. Bro, you ski and snowboard? Boy, you know you ain't grow up skiing.
RC.
Like, bro, come on now, Calvin.
RC, I told you.
How the hell you got into skiing?
All right. So, you know, I'm from Georgia, I don't do nothing on ice. But I came up here in Michigan. You know, my wife always trying to get me to ski like towards the end of my career. She's like, come on, let's try it out. You'll like it. And I was like, babe, I don't do nothing on ice. And when I finally retired, she got me out there to go try it out. I tried out skiing, and you know, I enjoyed it. I skied for a year. And then I switched over to snowboard because I, you know, I was had a couple instances where one ski would do something that the other ski wouldn't do, mm-hmm. and then get like this, and I'm like, that's terrible for your knee, like right. all that weight and stuff. So I like, let me get on the board, and because I like being locked in, and ran, I ain't looked back, bro. I love being on the mountain, man. If it was snowing on the mountain all year, I would snowboard all year.
You ever figured out surfing?
I tried surfing, but you know, I've always had a healthy respect for sharks because of Jaws when I was a kid, man. It just messed me up, man. It ain't my element. I was my element.
So when you on the lift, your skis are still touching the ice, right? Your ass is too big to be on that lift.
I do, when me and the wife are riding, I do weigh it down. Like, my joint be leaning like this.
I tried to tell him my ski story. So Andy took me out. And she was scared. I'm like, she's a non-athlete. I got this. So I go out there and I'm trying for 5 hours nonstop, no water. First time really on the slopes, but you get dehydrated. Your body fools you, it's cold. So I go up to the blue, I cramp up. and the skis moving fast. I'm going this way, that way. I took them skis off, I chunk them shit to the side, and I walk down. Take me back down, so I had to go catch that lift. Took me way up to the top gondola, and then I had two or three drinks, like, I'm done skiing forever. And I went down, I turned into rentals, and I retired it. I got on the board, I boarded for a couple years, then I kept falling. I was like, man, fuck this, I'm tired. I ain't falling for free. I used to get paid to fall. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's my life in skiing. I have to commend you for sticking with it, if you're really good. Yeah.
Man, I wanna be doing it when I'm 60 years old, man, so, yeah.
You mentioned your wife and her pushing you to do things. You know, you also didn't get married during your career. Yeah. And you spoke about the balance of wanting to be a great athlete, but also wanting to be a great husband. Mm-hmm. In waiting, what was a bigger deal to you? Was it, I want to be a great athlete, or I want to be a great husband, and I know I can't do that while playing?
I think it was everything you just said there. Yeah. It was exactly that. I knew, for me, the selfishness that I had, the things that I did take care of my body, the time that I spent, you know, after I come home from work, which ain't until 6 o'clock maybe, mm-hmm. like, I got like an hour maybe mm-hmm. to give to somebody else. There's like an hour of downtime where I'm probably not doing anything. Yeah. You know, I'm just like, that's not no way to treat another person that mm-hmm. you want to spend the rest of your life with, giving them an hour of your day, because I'm gone at 5, mm-hmm. 5:30, maybe at the latest 6 o'clock, back home at 6 o'clock, in my hyperbaric chamber doing my treatment. And then, like I said, I got an hour of time before I go to bed at like 9, 10, 11 o'clock. Yeah. I'm definitely going to bed before 11 o'clock because you got to get up early. Yeah. So it's just, I just knew that I wouldn't be able to keep all those buckets full, mm-hmm. you know, and be happy at the end of the day. And if I, you know, and keep her happy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the big part about it. I just knew I couldn't, for me, I honestly don't know how. Did you had a family when you
were? I got married, I was 24.
I don't know how you guys do it. You know, yeah. I'm like, God bless you guys. Like, for me, I just couldn't do it.
I can be honest, because I was like you. I did something, I had one day where I didn't do something after work. And I was an early work guy, I was a late work guy, and I was a huge studier. Mm-hmm. And so like, I put my babies to sleep, and my wife might go to the room, and I'd be on my computer. You know, you had to put the disc in, and I'd be on my computer studying. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't see them wake up. You know, and so I get that, and it is hard. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, it's, you had to be with someone who understood not only how much you love them, but how much you love that football.
Yeah.
Right, and it's a very difficult balance for people who didn't grow up with something like that.
To this point, to this conversation, man, you're, like you said, Hall of Fame, but like you one of the best receivers ever to play the game. How much did you think about that? Cause like me, I didn't care. I played in the NFL, like I worked at Walgreens. Cut me loose. Now I'm going to the club. Like, yeah, y'all got this check. Give me this check and I'm about to hit this club. But to be as great as you are and to hear like the hyperbaric chamber, Zach Thomas sold me his whole hyperbaric chamber, his old one.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to figure out if I could fit somebody else in there so that we can do the nasty while the machine's on. So, you know what I'm saying? Cause that it's kind of that big tube, the big tube.
So funny. It's actually not comfortable enough in there.
I know, but
ears popping.
You gonna get hot as hell though.
Yeah, we in there for an hour.
And when you get hot in the tight space, you get kind of claustrophobic. Like.
I know, but we can sweat on each other. I love it. But when certain people, when you were talking, I thought about it. Certain dudes that we have on, like how they thought about like being great. Mm-hmm. And for you to be as great as you were, like your entire day was built around being the best receiver in the world?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really was. I mean, just really focusing on what's going in and out of my body, what I'm doing with my body all day. You know, just treating this as this is my business. Mm-hmm. And that's really like, that was all my focus, like my input and output. You know, what's happening right here? You know, how am I treating this? How am I getting this ready to go again next week? That's really where my mindset was. I mean, I can't even fathom. Like, I was gonna ask you, like, what is that like?
It's hard. Like, it's a difficult balance, and it's about communications. If you don't communicate through it, you can't expect someone to understand it.
So right. You got married when you was 24. Mm-hmm. When did you meet your wife?
17.
Oh, so that's different. So y'all go back.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to, as a player, you had a set schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, you're calling out your entire routine, mm-hmm. and it was set. And I'm sure we all can agree that everybody that you know or knew respected that time. Mm-hmm. They didn't interfere with that. Nowadays, in retirement, people won't pull you left and right. Can you do this? Because you don't necessarily have that set block. Now, you know, in the offseason, when you were playing, things probably got a little looser where you can give your time here and there, but at least for me, it was a compromise. But in the off season, I get pulled.
To your point, you know, when during season, that circle tight, you stay locked in. And like, mm-hmm. like 100%, in the off season, okay, I'll miss a day, I'll be all right. I'm gonna go hang out, I'll be all right tomorrow, I'm not getting that day in. But you can make up for that, like early in the off season.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You went to college in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a crazy experience itself. Every time we talk about Atlanta, he lights up. So I can only imagine going to Georgia Tech in the heart of Atlanta, what that experience was like.
He went to a smart school. He went to an old nerd school.
Were you highly recruited? Were you highly recruited coming out of high school, and why Georgia Tech?
There you go. See, at first I wanted to go to Oklahoma. You know, I had recruiting letters coming from everywhere. But then like, I had some crazy stuff go down with the coach, what he was telling me, and it wasn't lining up. So I was just like, all right, you know, I'm gonna stay close to home so my family can see me play. So then it boiled down to Clemson, Georgia, Auburn, and Georgia Tech. At the end of the day, I think it just boiled down for me. You know, I was just thinking about education. I'm like, damn, if I go to Georgia Tech and I graduate from Tech, I'm good. I got a job, I'm coming out of here with a good job, and I can go work wherever I want to work if football doesn't work out, you know? So it's really kind of just academic focus to that point. When I was in high school, my mom used to send me up to, my sister went to Clark. My mom mm-hmm. said they went to Clark, Atlanta. My mom would send me up there on the weekend to get tutored by my sister. Neither one of us liked it, but at the end of the day, after we get done tutoring, my sister, I roamed around campus with my sister, you know? Yeah. So that being able to see that, that was part of the reason why I didn't want to go play baseball, because I got to see what the college experience was like. And being in Atlanta, man, yeah, I was at Georgia Tech. So Georgia Tech was not a lot of black folks at Georgia Tech, you know what I'm saying? So there was not a lot of, like, you know, just our culture to hang out with necessarily, but the AUC was 5 minutes away.
Right.
Clark, Atlanta, Spelman, mm-hmm. you know, Morehouse. You know, so we go, you know, mm-hmm. kick it there to AUC. You know, this is, I mean, it was great. Like, at that time, like, Atlanta has changed since then. Like, Buckhead has changed. Like, the whole hangout, like, the nightlife scene back then was totally different than what it is now. But, and they cleaned it up. They like, all right, we got to get all this club and stuff about it, Buckhead, you know, keep the value up. Right. But no, man, that's why, you know, I love being in Atlanta, man. Just that whole scene. Yeah, Georgia Tech was tough as nails. Like, you won't even know, like, you're at Georgia Tech, you don't even know you're in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And once you step outside of there, like, you say your face light up. You're like, what's up?
I got two questions about Tech, though, because you go over that bridge, the varsity's on your left.
Yeah.
That shell's on your right.
Yeah, yeah.
You take that right.
Yeah.
What's about a half a mile down? That Magic City, Magic baby. City.
The fact that you know all the turns from Georgia Tech is scary.
Oh, yeah, because you go over there because they got the black colleges over there. If you don't grab a normal girl, you slide to Magic City, his girls are there all day long.
You know what's crazy though? I swear to God, they sell Magic City wings on like Uber Eats now.
Cause Lou Williams, Lemon Pepper Lou blew up Magic City wings. They renovated.
That's wild.
You don't do that no more.
Nah, I know.
But I sent you a video. They have renovated Magic City. It's a double decker now.
Really?
Oh, Magic City off the chain, I heard.
I told you about this shit.
But man, but it's funny. Why Tech? I was there because you a little behind me. We were we were both Super 11. That's like the best 11 football players in the Metro Atlanta area. We were both Super 11. He looked behind me. When I saw that you went to Tech with that Chan Gailey offense, I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world because they didn't throw the ball.
That was different, though. Chan was a professional offense. Paul Johnson, when he came in, they ran a triple option.
And that's
so,
when.
So I was fortunate. I got Chan. Because Chan was in Dallas. He was in Dallas Cowboys. So I went there because they had a professional offense. So, like, they had that look. So I'm like, okay, I'm getting a look, a professional look. All these dudes came from the league already. Mm-hmm. 2 years after I left, though, Paul Johnson came in. And then Bebe, Demaryius Thomas, God rest his soul, he was there. So he killed it because you got that triple option with all this.
But
he had the professional talent guys. Mm-hmm. But they were running the triple option. So they was unstoppable.
That was dumb. But your numbers weren't crazy, though. Yeah, last year, what, like 80 catches or something like that? But
I don't even remember, though.
Yeah, actually. But them first two, because I went back and looked, I'm
like,
what?
A lot of catches in between then and now.
But I know. I've been a part of some.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, the tech decision, you say you made it as a educational thing.
More of an 100% an academic choice.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still, you don't ever look at me like, damn, I should have went.
If I would have went to anywhere else, it would have been UGA. But another big part of that reason why I did go to Tech, well, it came down to my visits. I went on my official visits, and I went to my visit to UGA, man. And I ain't going to put dude on blast. Everybody going to hate him if I said But I went to my visit there, and then the guy that had me on my visit, my man like dropped me off at some spot like with some other guy, like, I guess some younger players, maybe some freshmen. I don't know where we got dropped off at. Somewhere in the middle of UGA, big old campus. You know, I'm just like there, and we end up going to some crazy ass club and stuff, and end up the night like everybody all drunk. And anyway, it's just a bad situation.
It wasn't for you.
I'm in a situation where I'm trying to learn if I like this place, and I just get dumped in the middle of nowhere. I know I'm on campus, but it felt like the projects, you know, just the way the dorms looked at the time, you know? So then I go on my visit to Tech. I had my first experience with cannabis, you know? I mean, we're in the middle of Atlanta. We have a great time. Reggie Ball is my host. You know, he take great care of me. I'm like, this is gonna be my quarterback. Like, we gonna vibe like this? Like, I mean, it was like a done deal after that visit.
You know, a lot of what your career, when you decided to retire, a lot was focused on, okay, this man's 30 years old. It's only been 9 years. He has so much football left. And, you know, since you talked about just how difficult it was to recover and repair and be prepared to play. And I tell people all the time, the game day didn't retire me. Preparation for the game retired me. The reward was no longer worth what it took to be
good.
Ready.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned cannabis and your first experience with it, you know, you've been a proponent of it. How did it help you late in your career, though, and why did you turn to it?
Yeah, man, I think the biggest part with cannabis is just for an athlete, it helps, you know, there's so many more applications out here now than it was really when I was using it, but, you know, I just, you know, roll one up and smoke it. But for me, it was the relaxation, the ability to wind down. Especially after games, you know, it's hard to go to sleep after a game because you're just so wound up. Especially, you know, when you even, you know, going on a plane after a game, you know, sitting on that plane, your legs feel like shit, you know, just all those things. Just really, at the end of the day, just me being able to wind down and go to sleep, recovery, being able to get up the next day. That's everything. If you can't get your sleep, you can't go the next day. You can't go like you want to the next day. You can't be as sharp as you need to be the next day. So I had my cannabis. I rolled up. I even made edibles for the road trips. Made brownies. So when you get on the plane. Take that edible like right after the game. By the time you get on the plane, night night. Yeah. You know, it's just the ability to wind down was the biggest thing, which in turn, you know, helped with recovery. But definitely a huge proponent of it because I'm from Georgia, the whole Bible Belt. You know, just the negative stigma behind cannabis down there. You know, at the time, just in general at the time, was it just had such a bad rap. And just for me, my own experiences with it, like,
it ain't that bad.
Damn, I ain't never had no trouble with this. I ain't never wanted to hit nobody or do anything crazy. I'm straight chilling.
Bro, I told people all the time, I'd much rather be around my teammates who smoked or who use marijuana than drinkers.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right? Like, we can still communicate lucidly. Mm-hmm. Only thing they're gonna do is eat up all your food, if anything, you know, and also too, like, I realized that they were better that way. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of guys who would be in pain. Right? And, you know, cause it was one of my naturopathic doctors my last year, because it got to the point, man, where everything was so hard for me. I was 35. Mm-hmm. you know, and I still played like I played. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, my doctor's like, look, you know, do you know how many people get hooked on opiates and get addicted to painkillers? And she introduced me to edibles. Cause at that point I still had that stigma, like, man, I can't be a smoker. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it was just to be able to get treatment and be needled and all those things. So I am 100% with you. Not only the stigma as it pertains to athletes, but the stigma as it pertains to people in our communities. The sort of sentences that have been handed out to people who were part of selling marijuana when now it's something that's been legalized in so many places and the government is making money off it.
Yeah, man, that's why we're definitely a proponent of Last Prisoner Project, man. It's one of the groups that we support, and their mission is really just to, they're not going to cease to exist until everybody's out of jail that has served, that is in jail serving for minor cannabis offenses. Obviously, yeah. Nobody's doing anything violent or anything like that, but if you're just serving for cannabis time, that's their mission, is to get those folks out. And they have some big releases every year.
Having entered that industry, how is it, and how is business, like, how is maneuvering through that space, meeting with maybe politicians, you know, trying to get it more of on the record? Is it recreational here in Detroit?
Yes.
It is? So how do you operate in that space?
Yeah, man, I mean, we got into the space back in 2019, you know, and when we did it, you know, we were in the real estate, you know, industry here, just, you know, buying real estate, flipping homes and properties, and we ended up getting stuff in the quote-unquote green zone. And at the time, it was like, man, we could be a landlord here and just collect a nice check, and we put together a team. You know, we chose the latter and put together a team with the goal of getting fully vertical, you know, and being able to be fully vertical, having our cultivation all the way through our retail, allows us to control, you know, our own prices instead of having to go up and down with the market so much. So that's been a blessing. But doing that was just part of the, you know, that's just, you know, just a step in order for us to get to where we want to go. And our mission is to be innovative in the industry, you know, create new applications. And in doing so, you know, I think about all the products that we use as players, you know, from the topicals, rehydration, you know, to all the different tapes and all these things. And I'm like, man, you know, we can add this technology and cannabis and technology don't really go together, but when you're talking the size and the particle size of cannabis, mm-hmm. we're talking about nanotechnology, and that's when we talk about the micro size of the particle and the bioavailability of that product, because it's able to get to your bloodstream because it's so small and able to bypass through your intestinal system mainly. So being able to create products that are nano, which is basically all medicine now, like you think of Tylenol and all those things, it's all nanotechnology. So being able to, and the reason why we were thinking like that is because we had the ability to be in a consortium with, you know, Harvard, Johns Hopkins, UPenn. So we're able to see what they're doing right now in research, the delivery methods that they're doing, and how, you know, they're able to treat people, whether it's with cancer and whatnot, whatever different ailments. I'm like, okay, they're using nanotechnology, so we're going to get ahead of the curve. Let's put this in our products right now. And then let's use products that professional athletes are using. We're using topicals, but none of those topicals have any kind of anti-inflammatory component to them.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's add that to that. Let's create a better product there. Let's create a rehydration drink that has the cannabinoids inside of it so we can reduce inflammation internally as well. So just a true believer in the power of cannabinoids, man.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
But, bro, with the marijuana stuff, right, I remember because Rick's been on the show, Ricky Williams. Mm-hmm. Rick, a friend of mine, I played with him. Yeah. I remember when he was getting criticized so heavy, I was smoking a joint, watching it on ESPN, like, damn, Rick. You know, and you had, like, your reputation is squeaky clean, but you know you have that stigma. Were you ever, you know, funny about or, you know, trepidatious about coming out and supporting the cannabis? Because there's still people that think mm-hmm. weed's a drug.
Yeah.
Cannabis is a drug.
Yeah.
Did you ever not want to attach cannabis to your name?
100%. You know, when the industry went legal in California, it was always like, man, I want to get in, but like, okay, well, how do I tell my mom? Or how do I tell my family? Or like, how do the people that I grew up with always told me that cannabis was so bad? How do I tell them, you know? When my mom finally found out, and she damn near wrote me off. She really? Ran and cast me off. Like, yeah. When she first found out I was in the industry, but you know, now she actually uses the products.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you wanted to do. You wanted to change the
exactly
the and your name being attached to it. And you honestly, like when you were explaining a second, being so well spoken about it, I think that's what changes people's thoughts of it. And it's not just some dude standing on the corner selling dime bags anymore.
100, man. When you can talk about it, you can, you know, educate about it, 100% people are more inclined to listen. I mean, everybody want to learn.
Well,
you saying you chose football because of the team aspect of winning, mm-hmm, and how that feeling is so different from baseball or other sports. You ain't win a lot in the NFL, though, right? And you had this phenomenal first ballot Hall of Fame individual career. But on the other side of that, you didn't have the team success. How difficult was it for you to know I'm excelling as a player, but it's not equating to our team?
Yeah, 100%, man. I think I was fortunate, you know, during that time to have a great coach in Sean Jefferson, man. He was assistant receiver coach my rookie year. So he wasn't able to, you know, lean into me as much as he wanted to. My second year on, dude, like my sixth or seventh year, he was with me, man. You know, I was just fortunate. You know, we went 0-16 my second year.
Yeah.
So that's tough. You know, you sit there and, you know, you can't win a game, but I mean, had a good year though. You know,
right.
Went for like 1,200, almost 13 though. It's just like, and it's not like garbage time stuff. So it's just like, you know, I had somebody in my ears just like coaching me, helping building me, you know, building my character, you know, because when it's easy for me to like, man, when the team's, you know, shit in the bed, you know, it's easy to kind of jump on the bandwagon and just like not give as much effort or not care as much. But nah, he was always there chirping, you know. What did I tell you at the beginning of the season? And what he tell me, he's like, you want to be great this year? Every season, you want to be great this year? You answer the question, what you going to say? Of course you're going to say yes.
Yeah,
coach. Well, I'm going to coach you like you're going to be great. And he did that, you know. So I have to give credit where it's due, man, because it wasn't easy. The damn show wasn't easy, but having somebody show me what it looked like. Obviously, the eye in the sky don't lie. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to see what it looked like, because he showed me when I was giving bullshit effort, and he showed me that's what it's supposed to look like. Even when we're not winning, that's the effort you're supposed to give, even when we're down 21-0.
Gotcha.
You still, that's the film. That's what everybody else in the league is looking at. So I was lucky to have somebody like that in my corner.
You went from yellow jacket to gold jacket, but 2012 was something that we've never seen. And we haven't seen it since. You mean to tell me you couldn't get another 36 yards, bro?
Bro, you know, I look back on, I didn't look back on it, because I know I had like at least like probably like a like 5 to 10 drops on that season, probably that easy, probably another like 150, 200 yards. I'm like, I look back and I was like,
It's on me.
Right. That 36 yards. That's one.
Right.
Maybe
right.
Two. Like,
yeah. People viewed you as just not just a deep threat, because you took shallows and took it to the house and all sorts of stuff, and you were just a massive threat with what you would do with double teams, triple teams. But looking at your average per catch that year, in the touchdowns that year,
yeah.
You had 5 touchdowns that season,
yeah,
and 16 yards a catch, which was lower than what you were usually doing. That's like kind of oxymoronic for you. Did you pay attention to any of that then?
Your attempt to hit
2,000 yards?
I didn't pay attention so much to, well, I can't lie. I paid attention to the touchdowns because, like, yeah, you see those, like, 19 but 5 touchdowns. But then we look back at it, my coach showing me, like, it's like 9 or 10 different plays where I got tackled on the 1 yard line that season. Like, for real, like, that many, I was like, wow, that's like 1 yard. And a lot of them were tough. Like, a lot I just wasn't getting in, but there's like, dang, like, hey, I could have maybe kept a little balance or something. I don't know, but there's like 9 to 10 players. I'm like, dang, bro, I got tackled on the 1 yard line. Sure.
Was it Dan Orlovsky's fault y'all was 0-16?
It didn't help.
It didn't help running out of the back of the end zone. It didn't help. It didn't help that Jared Allen was on his ass the whole game. Like,
but dog ran out.
Hey, bro, look, I'm running the comeback. It was a boot right. I'm running the deep comeback, 20-yard comeback. I'm coming out that thing, I see Roy Williams just running to the sideline. I see all his teeth showing. I'm like, what the fuck are you laughing at? Why everybody running off the sideline? He's like, chuckle. We get to the sideline. You're like, man, that motherfucker done ran out the back of the end zone. I'm like, hold up. What? I can't fathom, man. So I'm waiting until they show it on the replay. And I see it. I'm just like, oh, bro. Like, right there, he's like, oh, this is going down in history.
Yeah, it's so funny, man, because Detroit fans love Dan now, because he's become one of the best analysts in the world. And we were talking to him the other night, and he was like, yeah, but when I was here, all y'all did was boo me. He was like, he said, everybody hated me. And I looked at him like, they probably should have. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't really do anything for them to cheer for you. But in going through all that, though, what are some of the best memories about being here?
I go back straight to that year, 0-16. Two of my dogs still talk to today, Gosser Chairless and Cliff Averill. We're sitting on the bench in Green Bay. It's probably like, you know, between 0 and 10 degrees, little snowflakes and stuff. About 10 minutes left on the clock. I think they still had Brett Favre at the time. I don't know if, yeah, I'm not sure. But damn, you're sitting there watching the clock, and you're just like, man, bro. We all looking at each other on the bench, winding down to 0-16. Can't help it now, it's happening. Like, we sitting here like, bro, all of us dead ass serious. Like, bro, I don't know how long I want to do this for. Mm. That's how bad 0-16 was, bro. Like, all of us questioning how long we want to do this for. But then, you know, it didn't take long. Like, after, you know, next day, check out, first thing smoking down in Georgia, get back to nice weather, you know, all is good, you know? Until somebody talk about football. But yeah, man, that was, bro, that was it.
And bro, it was when you hung it up after 9, the story, my mind went to Megatron tired of losing. He got plenty of money, he got records, like he tired of losing. If you were on a perennial playoff team, would you have played longer?
Yeah, I can answer that question. Yeah, 100%, man. It was 100% losing, it didn't help. It didn't help. I was at a time where my body, like you're saying, the preparation that went into it, really wasn't willing to go through that no more, just because it zapped all the fun out of the game for me. You know, I used to love going through it. I know it's a grind, I know it's gonna hurt, but it just hurt a little bit too much. You know, I was just like, man, like I can't even, like, I feel like I lost all the elasticity and like the pop, you know, in my ankles and all that. Just, and you know, that combined with the losing, you know, the body just telling you no. I even went to my dad a year before after my eighth season. I was like, Dad, after the season, I'm like, man, I'm done, man. Like, I don't love it like I used to. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you think you can do it one more time? I'm sitting on the couch and I'm thinking, as I'm thinking about it before I say anything, he's like, well, since you're thinking about it, you can do it one more time. Right. I was like, I guess I can go out here and, you know, get around and all this, but like literally, bro, I didn't feel like I had no pop. Like, I just feel like I was running flat foot, mm-hmm. you know, all the time. And so it's just like, I just felt like I couldn't be myself. And I told myself when I started playing, I wanted to play 10 years, I wanted to have 10,000 yards, just want to make a statement while I'm here. You know, I was able to accomplish most of my goals. I didn't get to the 10-year mark, but I did say that, like, when I'm not able to be myself and feel like I'm myself out there and do the things that I want to do, I'm done. I'm not going to be the one out here just collecting the check. I didn't want that.
You know, you're a competitor, and I love your combine story, right? to go there and to have made a decision, you know what, man, I'm not doing none of this stuff. You know, I'll do it at the school. The film spoke for itself as well. Take me through the thought process of a young Calvin who goes against what he was supposed to do in Indianapolis and runs 4.3.
So we're doing those meetings or whatever, and I weigh out, yeah, the meat market. You know, you're in there in your drawers and stuff and whatnot. And you get my weight, I was right at 240. But everybody was like, whoa, you know, I could almost hear like the action in the room. It was like, oh, like, dang, it's fucking heavy.
Right.
Everybody think I'd probably be like 230. Right. But it was like, I mean, like 5% body fat. So I couldn't lose weight, you know, just jacked from height, from, you know, just muscle. I mean, I went to college at like 185, 200, left there at 240.
Right.
So we're in there, you know, they're doing the weight and all that. And so we get to the interview after they do the weight, and everybody's talking about my weight. That's all they want to talk about. They weren't talking about nothing else. I'm like, damn, had a great college career and all this. Y'all just want to talk about me being 240. Like, so then after that, I was like, it's like, well, you can't run. You can't run to being that heavy. Like, can you run a 4.5? Like, I was like, so I called my agent. I was like, hey, man, I need some cleats, dog. I'm going to go ahead and run. He's like, you sure you want to run? I was like, dog. Like, I'm down there training with Tom Shaw. Like, I'm fast. I feel like I'm fast just standing here. Like, we had like four, like the top five, you know, times that year in the combine. You know, from the whole group that was training with us down there in Florida. So I was like, send me my stuff, man. I'm about to go run for these fools. When it ran, You know, and the funny thing is the story, everybody saw the dude give me back my cleats.
Yeah.
Funny thing is this dude just came ill-prepared for his, you know, biggest job interview at the time. He didn't bring his cleats, so I let him borrow my cleats. Just happened, so happened that the quarterback wore 15, East Carolina. And they saw him, he's the last one to run. They saw him giving me back my cleats. I'm like, come on, bring my shit. Come on, I gotta get over here. Because they're like, everybody yelling at me. Come on, what you doing? I'm like, trying to get my shit. And so they just saw they saw him giving me my cleats back. So it's like, oh, he didn't even run in his own shoes. Like, right. So I ain't say nothing. I was like, it's cool, legend. So
it was. Now you ruined the story. I mean, I guess it's too late now. He in the Hall of Fame. He didn't ruin the. That's what made the story good. You know, it went all kind of ways. They was too small. They were too big. You know what I mean? He still ran. And look at Calvin Johnson. These aren't even his shoes. Those shoes are for a midget, and they're for a little person. You know, when to be, you know, all that you were able to be, and then now, look back at what you've accomplished as this man, a different man who said, I need to be in a different space in order to be a great husband, in order to be a great father. Mm-hmm. In what you've now experienced in that part of life, how do you feel about the decision to retire at 30?
Man, I don't look back. It's so much that's happened, you know, since that time, man. House full, you know, I got, you know, three boys. I got a whole business that is flourishing. You know, it's doing better than, you know, I honestly could have dreamed. I couldn't have dreamed of being in the place that we are right now with the business. You know, I don't look back. Mm-hmm. I don't look back. I made a living for myself. I set goals for myself. I'm like, kind of where I wanted to be with, you know, the time I put in, where I wanted to be financially. So I was able to accomplish most of those things and get to where I was. That's all I was comfortable. I was content. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, after football, as you know, it's just, you know, I was looking forward to sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait, you know, I'm putting in work, you know. That didn't last long, you know. It was mm-hmm. just that competitive edge that, you know, wanted to accomplish, just that structure that we're so used to having, you know, it keeps pushing you forward, you mm-hmm. know. So then just opened up the business, put on the business hat, you know, tried different things out to try to figure out what stuck, you know. Did my Dancing with the Stars, I franchised, and ended up sticking in to finding something that I was passionate about in the cannabis industry, being able to be creative there. And, you know, like I said, that and my family take all my time. And really, I mean, at the end of the day, just truly just trying to, you know, bring that same level of excellence that I had on the football field to these things, family and the football. And, you know, still working on it, but I'm definitely working to get there.
What's the toughest part? Because, be honest, bro, you're not Megatron anymore. You're Calvin Johnson's husband, dad. You know what I'm saying? What's the toughest part of not being Megatron?
I don't know if it's not necessarily tough, man, because I never really was the one to be in the limelight. You know, I kind of like to be on my, you know, low-key thing, just moving around as I do. But I guess the hardest part, I mean, is just the camaraderie.
Yeah.
I think that's it. You know, I don't miss the weight, pushing the weight. I don't miss pushing niggas around. I don't miss all that. You know, I don't miss, you know, fighting dudes off the line and all, none of that. Yeah. I miss just hanging out, vibing with the guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you get the moments, whether the guys that are on your team or guys like you guys that know the struggle, you know, it's always a good time.
And looking back at having that, right, saying that, okay, the camaraderie is gone, Detroit's different now, right? The Lions are different now, right? There's a buzz around this team that was palpable when the draft started and they had you and Barry on the stage, you know, okay, representing the Lions greats. And then now they had Jared Goff and Hutchinson and Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, the two-star receivers of the generations look a little different. You know what I'm saying? One of the guys, you know, is 6'5 and ran 4'3". The new guy is 5'11 and ran 4'6". When you look at this team, though, how much, or is there any pride in seeing Detroit be able to have joy about what's going on in football?
Yeah, man, it's a lot of pride because even though we were 0-16, they still showed up. Mm-hmm. You know, they always showed up. So there's a ton of pride around this team. You know, I'm excited for these young guys, even more so because Dan is back. You know, yeah. Dan, I played with Dan my first 2 years here. So, you know, being able to, you know, embrace him, the soldier that he was when he played, because, man, he's out there playing, starting football games with one shoulder. I don't know if that spoke to him, you know, being a soldier or just the level of talent we had here in Detroit. But, you know, either way, you know, the man was a soldier. He's a man of most, you know, he's a great leader. And he surrounded himself, you know, with great players that played in the league. And that's what I'm so excited about, because you got guys that played in the league that they could look up to, that been there where they wanted to go. you know, you're gonna have buy-in, and we see those guys buying in.
How do you want to be remembered as a player in your personal life when it's all said and done?
As a receiver, man, just being consistent. You know, I make plays and do that, but I just want to be known to be consistent because I was consistently making plays, because I was consistently blocking, because I was consistently doing the right thing, because I was consistently where I needed to be. You know, just being consistent, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's true. More than being the most talented person or individual, you'd rather have that most consistent individual. You know, now, if that consistent individual is hella talented,
right?
Shit,
now you win.
That's even better.
Yep,
that's
now
even
you
better,
win.
You know, so, yeah.
You know, through your foundation, you know, you did stuff like have camps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you even started pouring back into the younger generation with some of your knowledge from what you've learned. You've always had a passion for giving back to athletes. Where are you now with that? How are you trying to continue to pour back into people who are now in the shoes that you wore?
I mean, I can tell you where that all started, man. I obviously grew up in a Christian household, but I was fortunate to have a great spiritual mentor in Derek Moore. Mm-hmm. He was our chaplain at Georgia Tech. Now he is the player development person over at Gamecocks in South Carolina.
Yeah.
He played in the NFL for a couple of years, but having somebody that, you know, been where you wanted to go, but that looks back down and built me up spiritually. You know, having that in my life was everything for me. So knowing what he was, what he meant to me, knowing that I can go and do that for somebody else, and even if it's just one person, I know the impact it had on me and how it's been able to proliferate for me and stretch beyond me into the community. So if I can do that to one person and see how that thing stretches, I mean, shoot, I'm gonna do it every year. Maybe I can touch one every year. You know, but that's where it comes from.
Yeah. When you had an opportunity to prepare a Hall of Fame speech, what things were most important for you to communicate to people who didn't know Calvin Johnson?
Man, that was tough, bro. Like, it's so hard to figure out how to thank everybody that helps you get to where you are, to the point, to the Hall of Fame, from childhood to that point in 8 minutes.
Right.
It's tough to be able to tell people how much they meant to you, the things that they did, the characteristics, the traits that they lived out that helped you to become the person, the individual that you are. That's the hardest part. And so, you know, that's all you're trying to do is how do I thank each level? So from high school or even before high school, you know, if some people go back to elementary, like, how do I thank all these different levels? Mm-hmm. And then with each level, just there's just more and more, you know, and it's just, man, that was the hardest part, being able to do that. And I had to take all the names out of my list.
Right.
I was like, man, I had names in my speech. My wife and I were working on it, like literally like up like 3 a.m. the night before. Cause I'm like, I got names in my speech, but I don't have all the names.
I might miss some people.
I'm going to miss people.
Right.
And I don't want people to feel a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, so how do we cover that? How do we make sure everybody's covered? So we figured out a way to do that along with, you know, just making it, you know, more personal. Cause I had a coach, but we kind of made it, you know, she's like, that don't sound like you. You know, so yeah. We kind of made it more sound like me, a little more personal, but you know, she was up with me getting that thing right at 3 a.m. before the
right.
speech.
You have like a very successful family when you talk about your immediate family. It's like a family of geniuses, you know, and you mentioned your mother already. You also mentioned the way that your father worked. I read a really, really amazing story about your parents. Mm. The guy who wrote the story was a lifelong Detroit Lions fan, and he said he goes to a preseason game, and at the preseason game, your parents sitting next to him. So he asked him a question to probe and see if that was your dad, and it was. And he asked your dad, like, did he have any advice for being a father? And he said, your dad said something first, and then he came back and told him, just be there for your kids. Mm-hmm. And he talked about always making sure they made it to your games as a professional, whether it was preseason, which we know you wasn't going to play, mm-hmm. or regular season. What was it like, man, to have the ability to feel his love, but also learn from that?
That's it, man. Exactly what you said, man. That's a great story. But it's really just about being there, you know, more than being perfect, you know, just being available, you know, for your kids. I think in everything, just how do you be great at anything? are you available to be great in the first place, you know? And I think that that's what my dad did. Like I said, he was on call all the time, but when he was at home, it was our time. Daddy, you know, he's tired. Walking up and down the railroad, getting up and down on the train, but you know, he come home and he knows it's time for us. You know, so he was just selfless and to that point, and just available. So I think to your point earlier, you know, just how you're a great father, just be there, you know, like say,
show obviously. Up.
Yeah, show up. Just show up.
There's always a struggle in every story. There's always a struggle. Like, just listen to it. Great father, great mother, baby genius, Georgia Tech. Like, you know, I'm sitting here waiting for the struggle. Like, it's always something when you have a Hall of Fame dude that's just like, yeah, this happened, and like, I had to get through it. But no, I'm 6'4 in ninth grade. Like, I can run a 4'3. Like, I always look for that struggle. Was there any struggle? It was just like, I'm Megatron. Fuck y'all.
I mean, man, I just think back, man. I mean, you got in trouble. You didn't get in trouble where, you know, everybody know about it. You know, it didn't get ESPN. But, you know, just I really worked hard to use how you spoke earlier to keep my nose clean, mm-hmm. keep my brand clean for a reason, man, because I know there's life after football. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I want to have a brand and I want to be able to go in and step into the rooms that I want to step in, I can't be out here acting foolish, doing stupid stuff on my social media. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be professional. I'm trying to walk in a room with a billionaire. I ain't trying to be out here on the streets and shit. Wow. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, just trying to model myself for what's next. You know, always trying to just be conscious of that, you know, because a lot of guys aren't. And that's when you motherfuckers be out here on their social media doing stupid stuff and people looking. That's how you're evaluating people now. That's how you're evaluating talent. That's how you're doing your background checks nowadays. So just, you know, just trying to be conscious of where I'm going. That's all. That's all. I was trying to keep my nose clean.
Yeah.
One of my favorite questions. I'm probably the one that asks it the most. The biggest pivot question, which is that one moment you can look back on and say, without this moment, it wouldn't be no me. I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Yeah, 100%, man. I had an internal battle, I think, you know, when I got to college, just trying to figure out who I am. You know, like, where am I going? Like, what's my identity? You know, and like I said, I was fortunate to have my spiritual mentor and Derek Moore show up on time. And there was a moment, you know, we used to go on these retreats. You know, you're in college, man, you're living fast, bro. It's just like, I didn't have like many guardrails. I was raised in a Christian household, but I was straying away from that a little bit, you know, just living, you know, just living, you know, just having a good time, you know, living that college life. But inside of me, though, it's just like, you know, a little irritability, a little frustration, just because, like I say, it wasn't like I was out here, you know, heard people doing it, it just wasn't living right.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, over time, you know, I was, you know, joined FCA, you know, Demo, Derek Moore invited me to join FCA, started going on these retreats and stuff like that. And it wasn't until we went on this retreat, it was in the North Georgia or Tennessee Mountains or something like that. We up in these cabins and all that. We, you know, we have a good time during the day, socialize, and in the evening we come together and worship. Mm-hmm. At the end of the worship, there's a Clemson chaplain at the time, I forget his name. He would always stand up. He was like, does anybody want to, you know, stand up and give their life to Christ right now? And the second day, or is it the third day? Is it the second or third day? I'm sitting there. And we're sitting in the room and we're doing our worship, praise, and you know, it was a great trip. So he come to that moment. He's like, does anybody want to stand up and give their life to the Lord right now? And I'm sitting there like, shh, I know I need to stand my ass up. Yeah, I'm out here. I'm out here in these streets. You know, I know what I need to be doing, but I ain't doing it. You know, Demo's trying to get me right and I ain't doing what he's talking about. You know, just I'm not living right, you know? So I swear to God, bro, I'm sitting here like, I know I need to stand my ass up. Next thing I know, the man, I feel like the man talking to my face. And I open my eyes, I'm standing up. I'm like, bro, I don't remember standing up, dog.
Oh, wow.
But I swear to God, like, I swear I was just like, damn, bro, I know. And next thing I know, he's like, thank you, brother, you're gonna give your life to Christ. And I'm sitting here like, oh, shoot, it's me.
Right.
You know, but he's like, walked down. But that was a moment for me that pushed me past, like, you know, being afraid of stepping up in front of my peers, kind of. And at the end of the day, it just like helped me to step out and be like, all right, this is what I'm about. This is my ID.
You know, I'm always fascinated by, like, when we get opportunity to talk to Hall of Fame players, because you guys vary in personality, right? There's like the Hall of Fame guy that when he gets into the Hall of Fame, you knew how important it was to him. because you could see they played the game as long as they possibly could, and like they wore that on their chest. Mm-hmm. You didn't live Megatron. Megatron was the name they gave you because you played football, right? It wasn't necessarily who you were, but it was the job you did. Troy Polamalu is one of my best friends, you know, and I knew that like making it to the Hall of Fame was a blessing for him, but that wasn't why he did it, right? He wasn't just hanging on to that. We talked to Ed Reed. We asked Ed about it. I'm thinking he's gonna say he's excited. He's like, man, I wanted to give it to Steve Atwater, like the Hall of Fame is something you could pass around. You know, he's like, I ain't care. He's like, I told him they could put me in the next year. Did that matter to you? Did being recognized amongst the greats in the game, did it affect you when you were told?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you just being, you know, in the same ring as just, you know, the guys that built the game. I mean, we all built the game, a part of this game. But, you know, just being, you know, in the room with those gentlemen, man, 100% it does. But it's not that you know, it wasn't anything that when you're playing, you're thinking about. You know, I think, you know, a lot of reasons guys get there just how you carry yourself on the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, I just go back to, like, my dad always told me, you know, anything you do to the best of your ability.
Right.
I mean, I try to do that. Maybe I don't do it all the time, but when I'm really focused and dialed in, I do.
Yeah. I think the one thing I take away from this, though, man, is, you know, I was 5'11", 185 pounds when I got to the league. Like, the way I adapted to the professional life was a necessity for me, right? I couldn't be on the field with you or Channing or Fred if I didn't live that way. Like, I knew I wasn't blessed. I didn't leave the hospital with enough. You left the hospital with everything. Right, but the way you talked about preparing for the game, like that's why you end up, you know, where you are, man. So we appreciate your time, bro. We've been wanting to do this for a while now,
I'm
dog.
I'm glad to get on here, man.
Cause it's like talking to like an urban legend. It's like, I know he was alive, I just never heard him talk.
You know what I mean? He has words.
We do want to give a special shout out to your sister and what's the other young lady's
Matisha.
Name?
Matisha.
Matisha.
So my older sister, Erica, we call her Shay. Keisha, big sister, and then Patricia, little sister. I thought they cheated all the time, bro. That's what got me right, though.
They brought that pressure.
They did.
So salute to them.
Yeah, appreciate you, dog.
100%, man. 100%.
All love, man.
All love, baby. Yeah.
Yes, sir. He's talking about
absolute
treatment. What you doing treatment for? Yeah. We can't cover you no way.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On a mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up.